Listen to WGN Radio's newest podcast, Behind the Badge, Illinois, hosted by David Hochberg. Behind the Badge, Illinois views current events through the eyes of Illinois law enforcement leaders. Tune in. Visit WGNradio.com/behindthebadge.
More music from First Night Evanston. Go to firstnightevanston.net. It is my great pleasure, as I always am drawn around the holidays, to seek advice, counsel, philosophy, and just fun from my friend John Cusick. But now, John, I got to get this straight. I know I've asked you for the last 2 years. Did you say former priest?
No, retired. I'm still.
It's like being a Marine, right? Once a Marine, always a Marine.
Well, I suppose you would say that. But no, I was at St. Pat's yesterday for Christmas. And
well, more importantly, you were at Christmas Eve. If you looked on John's amazing writings at Facebook, he wrote, "Today, Christmas Eve, I will be participating in something I have never done in 46.5 years as a Catholic priest. I will preside at Christmas Eve Mass at 5 p.m. What compelled you to do that?
I think I gave in to changing times. You know, as I mentioned in the next sentence after that, that I'm basically a traditionalist, and Christmas is Christmas. And
well, it's so funny. I was asking, you know, our mutual great friend, Kathy Murray, on the way out to celebrate with her folks and relatives on Christmas Eve, I was saying, well, when did people celebrate Christmas Eve and Christmas? But that's been going on for a long time.
Yeah, it's been going on for a while, but I've always asked not to be scheduled because I don't know, it's just me. I mean, everybody's got their own quirks, and that's mine, and it was okay, but it wasn't Christmas Day.
Yeah.
I always give it my best shot. I'm compelled to do nothing less, and it worked out fine.
Were you nervous?
No. Well, I'm nervous always when I speak because...
Why is that, John? After such a long time, why?
Because I really respect the fact that there are hundreds of people sitting in front of me, and I take them very seriously.
Yeah.
And I don't want to lay an egg, and yet at the same time, I don't write anything out.
I know. That's the amazing thing to me.
So consequently, I wouldn't say flying by the seat of my pants, that would be wrong, but I'm creating at the same time I'm speaking. And that can be nerve-wracking.
Sure.
You know, it'd be very easy to hide behind a text.
Yeah.
But I can't do that. I've never been able to in 46 and a half years.
Since you have grown, and you have grown, I think, as a writer by leaps and bounds, John has his, what I will call his first published book out. It's sold out. It sold out its first printing, ladies and gentlemen, but I imagine there may be a second printing. Emmanuel, God with us, Reflections on the Mystery of Christmas, and his writings on Facebook have gotten, I'm going to say, John, much, much better. You have grown, I think, in the last couple of years as a writer. Do you feel that way, too?
Yeah, I've always found writing to be intimidating.
Is that why, perhaps, you never wrote down any of the...
No, I don't think so. It's just a different... English has got many different forms.
Sure. You
know, one is speaking, one is writing, one is hearing. And people have always said, well, why don't you just have some... Or you tape what you say and then let somebody write up the transcript. Well, written English and spoken English are two forms of the same language.
True.
And I've seen some of my stuff that's been typed up, and it's terrible. Because you know, there's no room for inflection. There's no room
yes,
for
indeed.
Pauses.
Right, right.
You know, and you have to be a little bit more grammar specific when you write. Speaking, you can get away with some stuff. But I think when I retired, you know, and I didn't have to prepare a talk every week, I began to look at this thing, and you've been prodding me for a long time.
I sure have.
And so I began to play with it a little bit, and then as I mentioned to you, I think it was a year ago tomorrow, because I was here on the 27th last year, that I really discovered something like Facebook as my new pulpit.
Yep.
I just do short little things, as you know. I mean, you can read them in a minute. But I've been doing that, like that little book I put together. I started that 40-some years ago, and I just pull them all together finally.
How did you start this book? I mean, these are not transcripts.
These are little reflections I used to write for what we called the Sunday Bulletin at my first assignment, Mary Seat of Wisdom in Park Ridge. That's where I started. There are about seven of them.
Yeah.
And then I just kept it up. And then I just sort of put them in a drawer. And I don't know where I found them. My former secretary, Socorro Perez, she's a gift from God. She pulled all that together. I mean, I don't know where we found them all.
When you found them, and when did you find them?
Well, you know, they were in a drawer here and in a file there. And when I moved, you know, you start looking, you find things you never knew you had.
When did you decide? There must have been some point when the accolades you were receiving from your writings on Facebook were substantial enough to convince you that, well, maybe somebody wants to read my writings in a different form than Facebook. First of all, Facebook is free. Right. Second of all, it's not on paper, which I think gives it a sort of frivolous kind of mean.
I got good encouragement. You know, I think that's where it starts. You know, that people, I've always had a very low self-concept when it comes to certain things in my life, one of which was writing. You know, I could read you forever. I could read Reichel forever and thought, what a gift. I mean, to me, Mike Reichel was an absolute, utter genius at spinning a sentence.
No question.
You know, and then when the bar is set so high and you say, I could never do that, well, then I had to come to the realization one day, hey, I ain't Reichel.
Yeah.
I'm Cusick.
And then you
begin to shape and mold some things, and people begin to give you a little feedback, and they say, you know, you should do more of this, like Mr. Kogan.
Yes, I literally have been on you for a long time.
You know,
I'm just curious why you only publish 300. Is that part of the insecurity, too, Father John Cusick, to publish only 300 copies of Emmanuel, God with Us, Reflections on the Mystery
of
Christmas?
Yeah, I may do more. You know, Rick, I live sort of a day at a time, you know, and I don't have any, you know, being retired. You know, my long-range plans is to have a good time, not another job.
Well, I'm sorry. Today, I probably, because it's 54 degrees, I probably pulled you off a golf course somewhere.
No, I know. You know, I'll deliver for you.
Well, we always have
such
fun talking.
Last year, I came walking across from the train station in a blinding snowstorm.
It was horrible last year.
And I kept saying to myself, if this wasn't for Mr. Kogan, there's no way in God I'm coming over
here. I am spending, ladies and gentlemen, the entire hour with Father John Cusick, and then I'm going to go out and buy him a drink of his choosing. But first, I'm going to read you a commercial. Where are my guys? Oh, I'm going to read two commercials, but you'll get some, like, regular commercials in between them. Here's the first one. I can talk over this. That, ladies and gentlemen, is my last live read of the hour. So it's all Father Cusick and his protege, Rick Kogan. We're talking about you as a writer, John. How else has your life changed since you retired from the priesthood? There must be a sense of a certain more freedom, but you still are extraordinarily busy.
I am, but I think the difference, Rick, is that I can choose, I have more choices and options. For the 44 years I was active, I really built my life on trying not to use the word no, and I tried to make myself available. And I'm proud of the fact that I probably was able to do that about 98% of the time. I'll be honest, it's life-giving, but it's draining at the same time.
And not being able to say no, a certain problem I have, but you are not saying no to things that, sadly, are not always, and maybe half of them, are not always pleasant chores, ministering to people who are dying a lot.
And, well, I mean, for example, a week ago tomorrow, Tuesday, I was asked to do a funeral of a gentleman I had gotten to know over the last number of years, and I was his guest at Medina, and we would play, and he was just first-class gentleman. Oh, dear God in heaven. And I just considered it an honor when Mary, his wife, contacted me and said, you know, would you do Dan's funeral? And of course I'm going to say yes. You know, so I haul down from Wisconsin, and but that's how I've lived my life.
Yeah.
It's been a good life.
No question. I mean, as long as I've known you, you seem to have enjoyed every aspect of it, and I think that being a religious person makes it easier to deal with the inevitability of death than it is, you know, self-indulgent me.
Yes. However, and you and I have talked about this a couple times over an adult beverage, you never get used to it. Every human situation is unique. Every human situation. You say, well, you had another funeral. No, I didn't have another funeral. I had that funeral.
Wow.
Or I didn't have
Good
another wedding.
Point.
I married that couple. I remember when Jack Wall and I, when St. Pat's was getting really cranked up, he was on vacation. And in 9 weeks, I had 23 weddings.
Oh.
Now, I'll be very honest with you. I was as fresh for number 23 as I was for number one. What was 23 for me was one for them.
Yeah.
And
yeah.
It's not about me. And I think too much of the world today is so self-centered.
No question.
It's all about me. I see it the way people drive their cars.
Well,
just
you see
get out of my way.
You see it, too. You're more than fairly active on social media. And you see it, and you are sharing your thoughts, but other people are sharing some, you know, photograph of a funny cat. And
right.
I
can always just go down into the next one, or not even read it, just skim it.
Yeah.
People are who they are, and the only people I've unfriended, and there have been quite a few recently, are those whose behavior, their language, their values do nothing but rip people apart.
Yeah.
And I'm very sorry. The unfriend little thing you can hit on Facebook is, to me, very delightful. Goodbye. I do not need to be subjected to verbal violence.
Yeah.
I do not need to be subjected to people's mass hate and prejudice. I am just shocked at how much prejudice is still in our country. Stunned. I'm a kid of the 60s. I thought we rounded the corner. No, we haven't.
But I'm thinking, too, and I, to your point, that, yes, there is still much. And I think in many cases it's being refueled.
Oh, of course it is. The genie's out of the bottle.
Yeah.
You know, and that's what scares me. My dear friend, and I probably talked to him about you, my dear friend Alan Setcher, who I call my rabbi, he lives in Whitefish, Montana. And he and his wife and the Jewish community in Whitefish have come under the attack of the alt-right and the neo-Nazis.
Oof.
Who have published their names, addresses, phone numbers, email addresses on their international website. And it's the most frightening thing right now.
They must be scared to death.
Well, he told me he's not scared, but he's anxious. But he's also said, and this is where I think the human community, there's a grace in the midst of darkness. On Christmas Eve, Whitefish has their big Christmas celebration. And how did they start it this year? With a Hanukkah song.
Mm.
As a recognition and a respect for the Jews in their community. And I thought...
Oh, how powerful.
Yeah, and so it's really bringing a community together in the midst of some pretty awful things.
Yeah, I think this is a time of sort of general chaos. And you're seeing...
A lot of suffering that doesn't need to be there.
Yeah. Yeah. Are you troubled by all this?
Yes, I am. I'll be very honest with you. I am very troubled. It's not what I've lived for. It's not what I believed in. It's not what I preached. And how people in any way can even just dismiss this as, well, it's not that important. Yes, it is. This is the very fabric of humanity, the very fabric of a person's life. It's unacceptable.
Father John Cusick, formerly of Old St. Pat's, but still of this planet and of this life, and you can read him on Facebook. He is sadly did not anticipate the demand for his first published book, Emmanuel, God With Us, Reflections on the Mystery of Christmas, which has been a collection of his thoughts and feelings, first at a church in Park Ridge and then at Old St. Pat's. He never wrote down sermons or whatever they're called. You know, it's amazing we're friends because I'm sitting here with the priest going, those sermons or whatever they're called. I'll end this half hour. I'd love to talk about this other fabulous Facebook posting that begins, one Christmas as a kid, I had a miserable Christmas morning. Why was that, Father Cusick?
Because I was this little adventuresome kid, probably of 8, 9, or 10, and my parents were out of the house, and I decided to go on a hunt for the Christmas gifts, and I found them under their bed and buried in their closet. And I had a sense of accomplishment. I was sort of macho as a kid. And,
sure. Well, Indiana Jones.
Yeah, you know, look what I found. Ho, and I, you know, and... Well, come Christmas morning, everything's all wrapped, and I had to fake being surprised. And I was just a broken person. There was no joy. I had the fake joy. But part of gift giving is the surprise attached to it. Whether you're giving someone a tie or whatever, it makes no difference.
Yeah.
But to say, oh, I already know what's in that box, it's just, that's not how life happens. And so, of course, I learned a lesson, which I never could tell my parents, and I never again ever went on the hunt.
Yeah.
Because all the joy of receiving was taken away because I became incredibly narcissistic and selfish. And I learned a tremendous lesson.
How old were you?
I had to be 8, 9, or 10. That's all I can think of.
Yeah.
Because I remember what one of the gifts were was a tool set. You know, I mean, you're not going to get a tool set when you're 12.
Right. it was keys to a car.
But I remember that. It was a big tool set, and I felt, oh, man, look what I'm getting. You know, and, yeah, I'm getting a rude awakening on Christmas morning.
Why do you think, before we take a break and get some news and we'll continue on, why do you think, I don't even know if I know the answer to this, John Cusick, why do you think that memories of Christmas time, good and bad, are so deeply ingrained in us, meaning human beings?
Well, I think memories not only sustain us, but they also give us life. They really do. And they call to mind people and situations. I always think, you know, my dad, I loved my father, and I was only 25 when he died. And he left me with so many memories and thoughts and different kind of things, and so many of them come racing back at significant times. And Christmas, I think I only can speak because I've been Catholic all my life. Christmas is the Catholic New Year's. I mean, this is, you made it another year. And all the different things that come to mind. The only second time I ever saw my parents cry was on Christmas morning because I brought them not a whole bunch of boxes, but I brought them a tie box, and that was it.
Yeah.
And in that box were tickets, round-trip tickets to Miami.
Right.
And tickets for a hotel in Miami and Nassau. And it was my way of paying them back after they floated me for years and years and years to work for $4 a week at an orphanage. And I had to do something. And that was my gift. It was a gift of returning love.
You can almost right now see their faces, can't you?
Oh, stunned, shock, and then my dad, who was a saloon drinker.
Yeah.
He just cried.
Oh, what a story. I love that story.
Yeah, he just cried.
More with Father John Cusick. More music that'll be featured at First Night Evanston. Go to firstnightevanston.net. I could sit and talk to my friend John Cusick for days, but I only, well, we do it sometimes on the radio. Whenever I get when asked to have one of these fill-ins for Bill and Wendy, John is my go-to guy because I just think he makes great, great sense about life in general, and I don't go to church and never have. I've been in a few times. Funerals, baptisms. Weddings.
The great Fiona.
That's right. The great Fiona Cogan was baptized by
John the Baptist.
Father John Cusick. And when she turns 13 next year, I will send him to John's house in Wisconsin for a year to explain why boys are bad. That's all I want him to explain. I want a year to explain boys and dating. Maybe she likes girls, will like girls, who knows. But boys are bad. That's what I want John to teach her. John, talked to me. I was doing a story about in July of this year, and of course it was sort of religious based. It was a story about, did Jesus have a wife? It was this long piece in the Atlantic magazine that was really like a mystery story because there was some scam artist trying to convince people. But when we talked, you were so wonderful that, Rick, it doesn't matter. It doesn't matter.
No, I mean, we worry about the wrong stuff.
Yes.
But somebody has always got a hustle going, you know. The story of Jesus is the story we have, you know, and nobody is going to add some hidden insight after 2,000 years. If they do, find the exit and keep your hand on your wallet because it's going to either cost you your money or your freedom. You know, and so I don't even pay any attention to that stuff. I don't pay any attention to it. You know,
let's talk for a second, John. If you can remind people, and because I love the story, and some of you have heard it, about how you were drawn to the priesthood, because I think it is such a genuine tale.
Well, and it's got another part to it that since I've seen you last, you know, you're a little kid, and I was what they call a church rat. You know, I would be served. I always over at church.
Yeah.
And I'd see these priests, and I just always looked up to them, and I said, maybe I could do that. And the one that I admired was a priest, and he called me one day, maybe 15, 20 years ago, and I said, Father, before you go on, I said, I want to tell you, you're the reason I went to the high school seminary. And he said, you know, I always thought so. That's the reason for my call. I want you to preach my funeral.
Ugh.
I want to be remembered for doing at least one thing right.
Ugh.
And by God, this summer, I preached his funeral.
Where was it?
In LaGrange. She was 95 years old. And I was just humbled to have that privilege. And I started by saying, I am here because
of this man.
He was in my life first.
Wow.
And I'll just never forget the phone call, and I'll never forget, you know, going up behind that microphone, and here I am, you know, many, many years later, doing what he inspired me to do.
Such a remarkable story.
Yeah.
Your lifespan too, John, as has mine, has existed in a world that I think is becoming almost grotesquely politically correct, where, and it happened again this year. Look, I'm half Jewish, half Irish. I didn't attend a synagogue or church, and I usually say Merry Christmas to people, and someone says, well, what do you mean by that? And I'm like, give me a break. I don't just talk to, because that this has changed, has it not? I don't remember as a kid anybody ever saying Happy Holidays.
No, well, I think we're being PC.
Oh,
but you know, I have always said in the last month, you know, people say Happy Holidays, and I'll say a Merry Christmas to you,
because
that's my feast. I'm allowed to, you know, it.
Right.
Christmas doesn't belong to Nordstrom's or Macy's. You know,
right there.
It. So I think for them to train their employees to say Happy Holidays is absolutely fine, but I ain't going to say it.
Right.
You know, it's Merry Christmas.
Right.
And I don't have I'm not going to get my shorts in a knot over people saying, you know, well, in the old days it was never Happy Holidays, it was all Merry. I don't want to, you know, get down that road. Let go of that stuff.
Yeah.
You know, speak off of what's genuine to you.
You.
And don't react to what's outside of yourself.
Well, it's a matter of being true to yourself.
Exactly.
And not really, you know, worrying about
Christmas is my feast. You know, and I can say Merry Christmas. You know, I'm not going to say today to somebody who's African-American, Happy Kwanzaa. That's not me. You know,
well, I can't say it because I don't know. Is it today?
Today is Kwanzaa.
Today is Kwanzaa?
And the first day.
You guys
day,
know that?
The first day of Kwanzaa.
I'm asking my African-American staff here, the
you know,
people
and,
who are making this
and
show
if
work.
If someone were to say that to me, I would be honored because that means that's an event that's a part of them.
Yeah.
And I think that's cool.
Yeah.
You know, and Christmas is a part of me. And I can extend that.
What about the commercialization of Christmas? That is, I think, not just the commercialization, the sort of what I find the craziness of Christmas, especially the decorations. There was some station that had a contest.
Oh, God, I saw that.
I think it was called Who Loses or something. Who Lost the Light Battle or the Battle of the Light.
The Battle of the Lights.
I think that's what it was called. And, you know, when you see a reindeer sitting next to a statue of Jesus, sitting next to a statue of, like, Elvis.
I know.
I mean, this is chaotic to me.
Joseph, Mary, the Child, and Charlie Brown. Now,
yes, make sense of this, yeah, Father Cusick.
It
make
work.
Sense of
and
this.
And then over here we've got soldiers, and over here we've got...
neither of us seems offended by it, that's for sure.
This is where I miss my mother. My mother could be one of the most critical human beings in the world. And I'd drive her around. She was 97 when she died and claimed she couldn't see. She could see better than anybody. And she would just critique Christmas decorations as we drove down the streets. I don't like those colors. Whoever put that stuff out in front of their house? And so I picked up that gene somehow, you know, and I just, some of that stuff is silly.
It is. And you write again on your Facebook page, and I don't mean to drive all you people out there to try to befriend.
Sure you do. You
Father
did it last
Cusick.
Year. And
yeah,
I
know,
buried.
But that's when I tried. Now I'm like, don't friend him. Yeah.
Yes, you
figure
do.
Out how to read.
No,
wait
to, let him,
wait
let
for
them
the
all.
Book to come out.
No,
wait for
let
the
them
book
all sign
to come
up.
Out. One of the great things you've written recently in the last few weeks is honesty will be my gift to the child this Christmas. I would have thought, John, that honesty had been a gift you've been giving virtually every day of your entire life.
I have, Rick, but let me tell you why I wrote that. Because, sadly, in terms of public people, honesty is lost. And I'm not being political.
Right.
Because
I know.
But it's acceptable to lie. It's acceptable to lie. And there are people who stand in front of microphones, whether they're running for office or they're a spin doctor for somebody else.
Or they're hosting a radio show.
Exactly. Yeah. And it's just blatant. And I hear that stuff, and I'm saying to myself, what parent listening to this would allow a child of theirs to just lie? We just can't do it. But yet we find it acceptable in the adult world. And so when I said, honestly, I want to raise it to my consciousness, because I think, as I put in that little thing I wrote, exaggeration is a part of, you know, that's taking it and twisting it and making it bigger than it really is. If you stay on the data, I think we can all be better people. And somebody, I think it's, I don't want to dump on you as a representative of all the media. The media has got to call somebody to say, that is just a lie.
Oh, no question.
I mean, and they got to call it a lie.
Yeah.
They can't just simply say, well, that was spinning the truth. No, that's a lie.
I couldn't agree
with
you. And
then
more.
The next thing is a lie. And that's the only way, I think, we might be able to grab a moral compass back. Because I just think if nobody calls people on this stuff, the train is running down the track real fast.
Yeah.
And I have no idea. Is all of life going to be relative?
Wow.
Say what you feel like.
Yep. Well put again from Father John Cusick. You can read him on Facebook, and you can read him in the best-selling. I'm calling this a best-selling book. Very few first printings sell out. Emmanuel, God with Us, Reflections on the Mystery of Christmas. I'm waiting for John's book. I don't know what it'll be called. Rahm Emanuel, The Reflections of a Goofy Mayor.
You'll get a kick out of this. And I'm not told you this because I hired a literary agent.
You did?
Yeah. I don't know what's going to happen with it, but...
Well, when we have a drink in about 20 minutes, you can tell me who that is, and I'll go, you what? You what? We've got to take a little last break for me filling in for Bill and Wendy. We'll be right back. Welcome back to the last 10 minutes of Rick Kogan filling in for Bill and Wendy. Brian Noonan comes up after this, and Sean and his colleague, the two Kwanzaa celebrants. Thank you guys for making this all work. Father John Cusick, you cannot buy at the moment Emmanuel God with Us, Reflections on the Mystery of Christmas, his recently published book that sold out its first printing. You can, and I'm going to say it, and it's the bane of his existence. You can read him on Facebook. You can read him on Facebook, John Cusick. Not the way the actor spells it, the way it should be spelled. C-U-S-I-C-K. What's next for you, Father? What, when you come to the end of New Year and you said, and I believe this, that Christmas is kind of your year end. It marks a year. It marks the passing of a year rather than, well, I think I'll have five drinks on New Year's Eve kind of thing.
No, I can't do that.
Do you reassess at this point?
I take a deep breath. Mm-hmm. And I wrote on Facebook last week about a gentleman named Murph.
Right.
And he was the sickest guy in the congregation, and he had the biggest smile. And I'm convinced Murph said what I said yesterday in my own personal prayer at St. Pat's. I made it. There's something about making it to another Christmas. And Murph died, and I knew he wouldn't make it the next year.
Yeah.
But that night he sat there. Oh, he was pasty and no hair. I mean, he was a cancer patient.
Yeah.
But he made it.
Mm.
What am I going to do next? You know, I've never made long-range plans about anything.
Right. But the writing, not the writing bug, you feel now, having been away from the, you know, I'm going to call the daily grind of it all for a year and a half or so, and getting more and more confident as a writer, writing is going to play, I do think, a bigger, more substantial role in your life in 2017.
I think it will, you know, because I have the time. And as I just mentioned off the air to you, that I do more thinking
now.
I lived an active life of doing. And that's when I had to do and think in order to speak. I don't have a lot of as much doing anymore.
Yeah.
But I have a lot of thinking time. And I treasure that.
It must be contemplative kind of.
In some kind of way, it is. And I think, and I don't have a problem with that. It's not like I'm bored, because the greatest gift that life ever, my parents ever gave me, is I'm an only child. I've had no competition. You know? So people have always said, well, didn't you miss siblings? I said, are you nuts? Why would I want competition? And so I've always lived by myself, so to speak.
Yeah.
You know,
That gives you a remarkable self-sufficiency. There's no question about that.
My reflective time comes pretty easy.
Yeah.
And I think some of the things driving me right now will probably come out when I start writing again during our Lenten season in the end of February. I'm just passionate about combating all this new rage and hate and separation among human beings. And I got to do what I can. You know, we hear, you know, we're gonna bring people together. Not the way that's going. You're not going to bring people together.
Yeah, no kidding.
I really believe that the call of my God is to bring people together. And that's what I'm going to try to do. I don't know how I'm going to do it, but I feel very passionate about it. I really do.
Yeah, obviously.
I don't like what's going on.
I can tell. I can tell.
It's ugly. And in my language, in terms of religion, it's sinful. It's dividing people. When people can't even have a decent Thanksgiving dinner or Christmas dinner, or when you have to have someone to start the meal by saying, we will not talk politics here today.
Yeah.
Oh, my God. What's happened to us? Yeah. Where's our civility? And where's our sense of respect for a person, regardless of where they are in sports or politics or anything?
Yeah. It's driving a wedge.
It's terrible. The wedge has been driven. Now, I think I can't pull the wedge out, but I think I can put a bridge over the wedge. That's all I want to do.
How do you feel about your church?
Catholic Church?
Yes.
Catholic Church is as divided as anything else in the country. So, you know, Catholics pretty much, if you look at different kind of people who pull different things, they pretty much, their values and things are really reflective of the popular cultures, too. And I'm not necessarily happy about that, but we are who we are. And Can I change that? I can be who I am, and I can call people always to their best self. That's all we can do.
When you stood up at that pulpit on Christmas Eve and looked out at what must have been at Old St. Pac's, a packed, beyond packed SRO standing room there, did your mind, and I know you were nervous because you have respect for your the audience.
Yes.
Did you think back at all about when you and Jack Wall first came to Old St. Pat's and there were three alcoholics sitting spaced out?
Yeah, I did.
You must have it, because especially on Christmas Eve, I would think.
I did, but it was triggered, believe it or not, on Thanksgiving morning. I chose to come down. I took the last, I chose not to be at St. Pat's the last two Thanksgivings prior. I just needed to make a break. I had my day.
Yeah.
And I wanted to make sure that Father Tom Hurley, who's the pastor, wasn't in the shadow of anybody. Well, I came back this year and I felt good about that. But I was sitting next to Jack Wall and he leaned over to me at one time and said, John, it's been 33 years now. I mean, we've been building that for 33 years.
Wow.
And there's a sense of gratitude inside of me it's just absolutely wonderful. But to look out on Christmas, I mean, there was a gentleman yesterday morning at the 9:30 Mass, came up for Holy Communion with tears in his eyes. And you knew something was going on.
Inside. Yeah, sure.
You know, it's Christmas and it's not pretty.
Yeah.
You know, it could be a busted relationship. It could be a death. It could be a job. It could be a kid who's, putting everything up his nose and arms and everything. It could be anything. But it all is triggered by Christmas. And I just tried to call people to let every one of us has got a spirit side of us. I mean, what makes us laugh sometimes? No one knows. But something triggers inside. I said, if we ever can let that greatness that's inside of us out, we can make a tremendous contribution to the world.
Yeah.
Instead, we're saying, oh, I can't do that because I can't, And I'm always pushing that the world within should overtake the world without. That's been a deep belief of mine.
Wow, that's a great philosophy.
Belief, But I think I can see that in your writings, too. I mean, you as a journalist what you can trigger.
Try.
I know you do.
Try. What did you and or God have to do with the Cubs winning this year?
Well, someone said to
me... He's wearing a Cubs hat. That's why I ask, and I want to leave this whole adventure, the Cusick-Cogan adventure, which has been fantastic. And
somebody,
thank you.
Somebody
He's
said
wearing
to
a
me,
Cubs hat.
After they won, someone said to me, were you in heaven? They said, were you in heaven? I said, no, this is heaven. This is as good as it gets.
Did you go to the rally? Were you down there for that?
No, I had something
else. See, the
else
one thing about Father Cusick and Mr. Cogan is that that crowd would be too much for us. It's better to watch on TV.
Yeah, and I was at our club overlooking from the third floor.
Yes, our club.
Yeah.
John and I are famous for, if any of you have memberships to Great Private, if anybody is listening who is a member of Augusta National, please get a hold of Father Cusick via Facebook, because when we used to play a considerable amount of golf, we used to call ourselves America's Guests.
That's right, and we should fire that up again.
Invited. We would like to, certainly in the new year, fire up America's Guests. John, there's no one on this planet I admire more than
you, Rick,
pal.
This is
there
a joy
is
to
no
be with
one
you.
I admire more than you.
Give my love to Fiona.
I will. One day she'll come in here and go, yeah, one day she should be on the show.
Oh, we'd have fun.
What was I like? What was it like when you baptized me? You go, well, you were a very cute
well,
little
it was
girl.
In the wrist.
Yeah, that's right. And all of you listening, I don't know if I'm on Sunday on my regular show or not, but have a lovely, lovely New Year.
Happy New
all
Year
of it.
And Merry Christmas.
And Merry Christmas. And to my Kwanzaa celebrants who I just met today, you did a lovely job. Thanks for producing and engineering. Brian Noonan will be up shortly filling in for Rowan Anna. This is Chicago's very own 720 WGN Chicago and WGNRadio.com. It is 3 o'clock on Monday, the 26th of December. Bye-bye.